Today in The Late Show, we're talking about the 5E campaign Bunt the Straight Way Lost, and then we're looking at a pen and paper inspired exhibition on the peasants' war in the Luther Museum in Eilben. And we're also talking about the history volume with short adventures called Schnappetmung. Today we're guests at the Luther Museum in Eilben. Luther died right next door and he was born a few streets away. That means the city where the life of the Reformation began and ended invited us, and we're here especially for a special part of the exhibition in the museum, which revolves around the peasants' war. 2025 will be a big anniversary, and this exhibition uses pen and paper techniques and ideas to bring the different parties and the complexity of the whole situation closer to people and make it playable. We wanted to take a closer look at that, and that's why we're going up there. But first I have to explain one thing. This late show is a big exception in that we're sponsored by the Luther Museum. We were invited, and this will be a long-term or medium-term collaboration. I'm not allowed to say exactly where it will end up, but it's just beginning. And above all, it's an exception with the sponsorship, because we usually turn down most sponsorships. We've made an exception here, firstly, because we really like working with museums, and secondly, because the exhibition sounds really exciting in this collaboration. So at this point, first of all, a big thank you to the team at the Luther Museum for the collaboration and sponsorship, and also a big thank you to the team at the Luther Museum for allowing us to have fun here in the exhibition and find out how the role-playing approaches work. The idea behind it is that we move through a small dungeon that makes the 16th century tangible and playable, and we are assigned or drawn at random one of five characters with whom we go from station to station and have to make a lot of difficult decisions. There are people represented like someone from the clergy, an ecclesiastical woman who is facing possible expropriation, an official who is caught between two stools, a representative of the citizens who is in favor of the Reformation, and also a nobleman, and all of them are embedded in the history of the time, some of them real characters, and have to find out how to face their fate.
After the Mass, a poor and frightened-looking nun comes up to you. O Lord, I ask you to grant me shelter. I have joined Luther's teacher, which is why I fled my monastery and I fear for my life. Please take me in. It's probably a bit indecent, right? I think I'll take in the nun. I'm really sorry about rewriting the I have to make myself more popular with the people here again.
So, protection in your household rifle.
After a bit of a wandering through the dungeon, I found Jan, who is, among other things, responsible for this little journey through the 16th century. And my main question is, how did this idea come about? Well, I mean, a lot of people try to implement things in a playful way, to bring things with them, but you really have built a labyrinth here.
Yes, you could call it a labyrinth. We sometimes call it a game board. You move through it. The idea was that we really go into the 16th century, because the time is relatively far away, and when you look at it, you come up with preconceived images, and our idea was to build up empathy in some form, and the best way to build empathy is to go in and actively become part of something, and that's why there has to be an environment that you go into.
Game board is a good term. I think I said before that I feel like a figure that is being marched through or pushed through by someone who obviously doesn't know the way and from one station to the next. That means that it is intentional, also in terms of the look, that it is a bit reminiscent of a game box or a small miniature landscape, a dungeon,
Exactly. So, the game board aesthetic was chosen deliberately, and the labyrinthine aspect is also deliberate, because we want to encourage people to go their own way and to give them space with this autonomy that is somehow part of it. And that is how we have these different little corridors and the dungeon-like nature.
Okay, so someone on your team is definitely a fan of board games and or role-playing games. I have a vague idea that it could be you, among others.
I am, among others. I have to say, however, that I only joined the team when the exhibition was already up and running. the original role-playing elements, that must have been our boss Mirko. Well, yes. Mirko, when you see this, we recognize your signature. Role-playing is great. Keep on playing.
Accordingly, you can play through this too, if you want, with one of the characters. I tried one of them now and the result was, it could be worse, but it wasn't good either. Is that the standard experience and the idea behind it, that you realize that there is no good decision?
That is probably one of the best results you can have. It could be worse. The 16th century was not a beautiful, easy time. I think if I had to formulate a lesson or something like that, it would be that it is not easy. There are no easy solutions and social conflicts always have different aspects and social conflicts can only be resolved if you think complexly and we want to present the complexity and that means that sometimes it cannot end so easily because things are not simple, because many things are interconnected and because you have to please many people. Because nobles and commoners and peasants all see the world very, very differently and the Boian War is ultimately a tragedy because it goes terribly wrong and thousands of people are dead. And a key idea is that it fails because people no longer talk to each other, that there is no common language and that all these interests conflict with one another. And to reconcile all of them, which is probably a very topical issue, is not easy.
While we're on the subject of very current issues, I came here with, to put it mildly, a fairly superficial level of knowledge when it comes to the peasants' war. What surprised me, for example, was the amount of propaganda with imaginative visual representations of opposing parties and with literary works that were distributed, which reminded me a little, to put it mildly, of social media these days. That was my aham. Have you observed anything else or that you as a team have noticed? What people take away from this that they may not have known before?
One aham that I experience relatively often is that you don't have any peasants here. It's a peasants' war. In the five people that we have craftsmen, we have a citizen, we have an official, we have a nobleman and we have an eptisan. There are no farmers involved. And the ahahafic behind this is, of course, there are rebellious farmers. But another term is also uprising of the common man. These are people from many different social classes and not, strictly speaking, just farmers. And another AHA effect that I experience again and again is, oh yes, the nobleman, the count, who is involved. He is a Protestant, he is a follower of Luther's teachings. He definitely wants a few reforms, but he would like to be at the top of the whole game even after the reforms and so he has very different interests to the insurgents. So again and again, it is just more complicated. There is not only top and bottom, there are different factions, there are different ideas and I have often heard people saying, okay, Albrecht did this and that. Count Albrecht is relatively well known locally and is also a very positive figure, and he doesn't come off so well with us.
Yes, well, nobody comes off really well.
Nobody comes off really well. Elsa Knott, who is the citizen, is probably the most likable because she has a genuine desire for change. But yes, in principle they all have their weaknesses. All their things that they don't see and hopefully learn to communicate a little with each other, even if it then becomes difficult of course and you might.
Die of stress. Yes, that's what happened with the character. He tried to please everyone somehow and then died of stress earlier, which is perhaps also a new insight for me. But what is of course exciting is that we are at a hysterical anniversary in 2425, now above all 500 years of the Peasants' War, which is why I ask me, what will happen next? So will there be more activities here to keep the topic alive for the anniversary?
There will be a few more things. We will definitely be here with the exhibition throughout 2025. We are planning the exhibition from 2025 onwards in order to expand on an online aspect. We will also be on social media and our characters, who you can play here in the exhibition, will have their say there. TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram and then they will squabble with each other again and take the conflict to a new medium. And there will be a lot going on in terms of events too. I can't say much about that yet, except stay tuned and take a look until then. Oh, dead trap delivery. Two worms landed with me.
Dead trap delivery. One of six. Yes, I mean what? I think it might be that we'll stop by here again in 2025 and see what's happening or be there when things happen here. Let's put it this way, I think a lot of people are interested in seeing how we can perhaps take up the topic again for 2025. So we'll be happy to see you here again as
guests. You're welcome to see you here again as guests, and a little leaflet has already flown past me.
Oh, fresh from the press in the back corner. Last but not least, I'm also curious to see which character you've been assigned.
Here, too, you can let them tell you, so to speak, which of the five characters suits you and who were you, rebellious, noble? Now I actually have to tell the whole story. When I played the exhibition for the first time, I was assigned the strict Eptison, who didn't really tell me, and the longer I played her, the more empathy I had for the poor woman and she keeps writing to the city official, another playable character, asking him to please help her now, and he doesn't help, and I got so angry with the guy. Why doesn't he help? Why does he always just talk and do nothing? And then I went to the last station where they say, take a personality test, see who you are, and oh, surprise. I was the city official because I'm obviously the balancing mother type, and well, I struggled with that realization for a while.
Yes, I have him, I was assigned to him and played through it, and it's always like that, sitting between two stools, nobody likes you and in the end you die of stress. I hope it won't turn out that way for you.
I hope not either. I'll look at my boss again, but no, it'll be fine.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. I would have a lot of fun crawling through the corridors here, and we'll look into it. We also have another review before we get to the epic breadth of the Straight Lost Whitman. Let's talk again about short and small tidbits about ghoul adventures that can ideally be played in a few hours in an evening. They are collected in a volume called Schnappatmung.
The scenario is as follows. You only have 2 hours to play a Cthulhu adventure or the SL field, and you have to improvise quickly. You don't have time for long preparations for the horror pen paper evening. So you grab the Schnappatmung volume, which contains 7 or 7.5 short adventures that you can almost read off the page. They are not scenarios. The adventures are fully developed. They are just very short, on average 8 pages long. However, this brevity also means that most of them are rather straightforward and twist-free. We will spoil the premise of most of these adventures in this review. So be warned or skip to the displayed timecode. Spoilers. In one adventure, we crash on the subway in a random city, are attacked by ghoul, and discover a dark secret. In another adventure, we play a submarine crew that comes into contact with Hydra, discovers their temple, and inevitably dies. Or we are invited to dinner by strangers on the street, but it is only bait for an occult ritual. Or do we have to hunt a monster in the jungle that turns the tables? In another adventure, we are locked in a prison cell with someone, and this someone is basically the thing, and we urgently need to escape. Spoiler section end. Most of the adventures don't have more than this half-sentence premise, but that is also the volume's requirement. Incorporating a twist into 8 pages is not easy. For us, however, the adventures that manage to do that are more exciting. And since almost all of the adventures written by Miri for the stream are one-shots that have to fit into this time frame, we are perhaps a little snobby and are happy if there is more to it. We have therefore selected one of the adventures from the volume Extraordinary Times and played it in the livestream at Conspiracy Con. We will therefore not spoil it in this RC either. Check it out on the Let's Play channel. Another adventure that is at least a little more complex is A Dreamy Suit, which also starts in a brewery, no spoilers, and gets bonus points from me just because the Karlsruher Moninger Brewery is mentioned, even though I don't actually drink alcohol and don't like beer. Where did the sentence start? It starts in a brewery and ends somewhere else entirely. A lot is made of the number of pages here, and I said 7 INHB. One of the chapters is not an adventure, but a construction kit. With 5-room villa, an attempt is made to transfer the idea of the 5-room dungeon to a Cthulhu, horror or cultist villa, complete with random tables. I'm skeptical as to whether it will work that well, but we really have to test it out. For 15 euros, Schnappatmung offers material for 8 short gaming evenings with 3 interesting ideas and 5 very simple, but nevertheless well-prepared and clear adventures. The adventure we chose, Extraordinary Times, is the one that still requires the most preparation. The submarine scenario would have benefited from having investigators included. You don't want to play that with your own characters that you can then throw away, and the fact that the two relevant ships are called Barnacle and Crispy Crab or Krusty Crab depending on the passage in the text doesn't help the mood either. The booklet gets as many points as there are adventures in it, so 7.5. And no, with 10 adventures it wouldn't have been 10 points. And if it's just one adventure, then there's more than one. At the printing press I picked up a book that actually contains a lot of things that fit in pretty well here in this exhibition. Among other things, it's about an angry clergyman, a monk who criticizes those in power, and a lot of religious themes, rebellion and the reconciliation of different groups, in this case even different species. The Straightway Lost. It is a campaign book with setting information in a complete campaign based on Dante's Divine Comedy, but not set during Dante's lifetime, but at the end of the 15th century. We start here in 1492 and play in Florence. But I don't think it's a big spoiler if I say that we then go to hell with the intention of finding out something there. How much of this is actually a campaign? How much of it is simply a retelling of the Divine Comedy and how well the whole thing is playable in the end is something we'll discuss in more detail.
The Straightway Lost, whose title comes from a line in the Divine Comedy, uses about 90 of almost 400 pages on an introduction to the setting and its rules. This includes a pleasant description of Florence and Europe in the 15th century, which also clears up a few prejudices or misunderstandings. The Divine Comedy was never published here, so no one can have any doubts later. In addition, there is a world design that is very much based on Lanta's work and is thus again characterized by a mixture of Catholicism and antiquity. There are also non-human beings, but they are all linked to biblical themes. Many five species have to be left out here. No bird or cat people in Florence, but the Tieflings as Profondi, for example, are given an interesting background. In terms of rules, several classes are also excluded from the setting, but two new ones and a bard subclass are introduced, which are intended to represent the educated and philosophy and art-loving courtiers. The new classes work with mastery points that can be used for special powers that mainly have to do with changes in reality and persuasion. This reads exciting at first, but the rules seem a bit clumsy and give the impression that 5i might not be such a good system for the setting. The majority of the book is then devoted to the campaign itself. The heart of Florence is divided between those who support the sick ruler Lorenzo Medici and those who follow the critical monk Savonarola, who makes unwelcome statements to both the church and the secular rulers. The Sis are drawn into these political turmoil at a celebration where a murder occurs. Savonarola sends them to seek the advice of a wise Eremite woman and there they are summarily transported to the afterlife. The PCs are chosen by powerful fairy women to travel through hell, purgatory, and paradise to find out which of the people in Florence are in league with the devil. To do this, they are sent through a fairy teleportation nexus and are given Maria Magdalena Tiefling as their companion and supervisor. As a result, the PCs must face their own sins in each circle of hell and purgatory, allow themselves to be purified by their behavior by helping others and sometimes paying with memories in order to progress. This is epic, but requires surprisingly little initiative from the characters. The path always goes in one direction. The last part of the journey through the solar system to God should ideally only be narrated, as it is basically just a roller coaster ride with no control over the route. In general, the Sea are usually just witnesses to what is happening and have everything explained to them by Mary Magdalene, who intervenes on their behalf if necessary. Even the realization of who the culprit is and the solution to the problem are presented simply, with little to no ability to deduce. Here, too, the narrative intention and the implementation as a 5i setting clash unfavorably. The fact that gods and demon lords also have values in D&D and can therefore be defeated, albeit often only very, very theoretically, is not something you have to like, but it is simply the way it is. The most powerful beings in Straightway Lost, on the other hand, simply have no values. They cannot be defeated. Will they be challenged? Will the SCS simply be destroyed, or will they not get any further? That is the text. Incidentally, the book is only available in English. Mostly pleasant, if sometimes a bit didactic, and the fact that there are plenty of and mostly coherent illustrations makes the book a nice travel guide, but not necessarily more interactive. With a few exceptions, the action stays on track and feels more like a novel than an adventure and not like something that works with 5e hero figures. In conclusion, Gwei Lost is a fascinating book and it is also a pleasant read, but as a campaign I find it very difficult to play and extremely repetitive. Accordingly, I give it 6.5 out of 10 possible points, with the note that it can certainly provide a lot as a game aid for the Renaissance or the transition from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance. That was the review part and also today's late show in general. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you to Jan and to the Luther Museum in Eilbin for inviting us here and allowing us to come by and for your support. We'll see you in another show, we'll hear you in a podcast, or we'll see you in a live stream. I look forward to seeing you. Take care and see you then. To show people empathy for the different parties and above all to clear up prejudices. Indy, sit. Indy is not allowed into the museum. Indy, ab.
Yes, it works. Great. The idea was good. The idea was...
good. The implementation.
We never have enough outtakes.
Okay.
That was good, but I think the worky here.